So please welcome Tim Crowley.
Thank you. In January of 1983, I was 24 years old, unemployed, and living on a couch in my parents' living room, or on friends' couches, or with whoever else would put up with me for a few days. But from time to time, I'd stick out my thumb or hop a freight and go traveling to places that I'd read about, heard about, or just wondered about. But I always ended up back in Los Angeles, because LA was home, and LA is where I picked up my $500 railroad unemployment check. I was a well-groomed, high-class drifter with time, money, and no responsibilities whatsoever. And I loved it. But I knew that I couldn't keep living like that. I knew I had to change, because I knew that someday those checks were gonna stop. So I joined the Coast Guard. And it wasn't a rash decision. I joined because I couldn't find a job and because I had noticed and admired those sleek white cutters in fishing villages up in New England and in the Pacific Northwest. I even saw a Coast Guard cutter in Omaha, Nebraska. I had played cat and mouse with my recruiter for a while, but in January of 83, I signed some papers agreeing to report for boot camp in July. And about a month before my reporting date, I showed up to my recruiter to clarify a few details, to thank him, and to say goodbye. And he looked at me kind of worriedly and said, "What do you mean goodbye?" And I told him I was gonna go on one last epic thumb that would end at the Coast Guard Training Center in Cape May, New Jersey, on my reporting date. And he said, "You can't do that." And I said, "I have to do that because I have never seen a bayou or the Everglades or the Gulf Coast, because even though I'm from the South, Southern California, I had never thumbed through the deep South because I had seen Easy Rider. But now I had a plan. I had my recruitment papers and I had a plan. I was gonna thumb through the South and see the Okefenokee, the Suwannee, and alligators. And if anyone hassled me, I would show them those papers and tell them I was thumbing to boot camp." And my recruiter said, "You can't do that." And we had our first fight. And it was a big fight. And it got to the point where he says, "You have to go and do what I say. I've already signed these papers." And it got to the point where I said, "I am not some 17-year-old kid right out of high school. I'd signed some papers and I haven't taken an oath yet." And then he got nice and I got nice. And he convinced me. And so instead, I went to the Sierra Nevada for 3 weeks or so, which is where I stopped smoking marijuana for the first time. And I did it symbolically. I climbed to the top of the Great Divide that divides Kings Canyon and Sequoia Park on the summer solstice, and I smoked my last bowl of weed as the sun went down. And then I buried my beloved stone onyx pipe on that rocky ridge, hoping that it would confuse future archaeologists. And I spent my last week or so in LA surfing on couches and saying goodbye to friends and family. And when I got to boot camp, I learned why they didn't want me to hitchhike to boot camp. Because boot camp is all about the bus. The bus that picked me and a whole lot of other people up at the Philadelphia airport late on a hot July night. And then it drove around southeastern Pennsylvania and parts of Jersey picking up other people until it was packed. And then it and two or three other buses drove through the gates of boot camp, the same gates I would have shown up at if I hitchhiked. And those doors accordioned open, and we stepped into a movie. There were dudes running from everywhere, screaming at us about lines, about forming them, or standing in them, or on them. And they kept having us count from 1 to 10. And if anybody screwed up, and somebody was always screwing up, we had to stop and do push-ups and start all over again. And they were shuffling and reshuffling these groups until they formed us into our companies. And we met our company commander, our drill instructor, apparently. And we were all in the line staring with our eyes front, staring at nothing. And my commander was coming from the right, and I couldn't help myself. My eyeballs snapped right. because there was a clear and present danger about to enter my personal space. And he kept walking like he didn't see me, and then he went like this. And we were staring in each other's eyes. And I saw so much power and authority there. And I was so scared, and I was so pissed. I was in full fight or flight mode, and he knew it. And he went like this and got that far from my face because apparently my personal space had shrunk to what's between my ears. And then he started to fuck with that. What's your name, recruit? Eyes front. And I knew this. I knew this because he had asked the same question to other people. And they'd all screwed it up. They didn't say it loud enough, or they didn't say it the right way. Some people were even screwing up their name. But I knew this because I wasn't some 18-year-old kid right out of high school. I was watching and listening and learning. I knew what pissed this dude off, and I was not going to do that. Sir, Timothy Robert Crowley, sir! And from this far away, he must have been looking me straight in the eye. I don't know, because my eyes were front. But he said, do you think I want to be your friend? Do you think I care what your fucking name is? And I yelled out, sir, no sir. And he was still this far in front of my face. And he said, does anyone else think I care what their fucking name is? And we all yelled, sir, no, sir, and did more push-ups. And he said, we were going to be out there all night until we got it right. But the military's all about schedules, and I think we were scheduled for 2-3 hours tops of bus therapy. Because after a while, we hadn't gotten it all right, but they made us form into these little groups, which we did a lot quicker than we would have when we first got off that bus. And they marched us into this labyrinth of buildings where we were poked and prodded and bent over and asked questions. And they gave us stuff and took stuff away. And someone finally gave me a pillow and a couple of blankets and a rack. And I went to bed around 3 o'clock. And we all got yelled awake about an hour and a half later, and it all started over again. But around 9 or 10 in the morning, maybe, we were all gathered in this huge auditorium, all the new recruits, and they're telling us different things. And this one guy came up with a clipboard and said, the following recruits report to me. And they named off about 12 names, including mine. And we went and we followed them out of the room, and we were still in our civilian clothes, and he handed us these red dog tags that we had to wear outside our uniforms. And we were processed along with everyone else, but we had to travel together, and Commander Clipboard had to escort us. And at one point, and nobody can talk to us, and at one point, we all ended up in this, all the red taggers ended up in this waiting room. And that from time to time, a door would open, and the Commander Clipboard would read off a name, and one of us would go in. And that happened again and again, and no one ever came out. And then they called my name, and I went through that door. And it was a conference room with a big dark wooden table with little golden water pitchers down the middle and all kinds of papers and folders around the edge. And it was surrounded by about 12 Coast Guard officers and petty officers and civilians in suits. And they're all looking in those folders until I walked in. And then they were looking at me. And one of them said, you have tested positive for marijuana and you have a sexually transmitted disease. Can you explain? And I don't know if you remember that mayor from Toronto that got busted for smoking crack. I used his excuse. I said, there was a party for me before I came to boot camp. I got really drunk, and I might have smoked marijuana then. I don't remember. I didn't tell him the other option, that 2 weeks wasn't enough time to flush 10 years of chronic marijuana use out of me. And then they asked about the disease. I gave him a quick synopsis of my last 3 years and probably said the typical male thing, I thought I was being careful. And then they said, why should we keep you? And in spite of everything that had happened to me during those last few hours, I really wanted to stay. So I told them the truth. I told them, I went into more detail about the last few years and traveling and climbing and thumbing and hopping freights and seeing the country. And out of nowhere, out of all the stories I could have told, I just started talking about this time I climbed a mountain in Utah, and I was coming down, and it was late in the early in the evening on a summer afternoon, and the summer thunderstorms were kicking off. And I got to the spot that I had clambered up easy, but it looked a little too sketchy to climb down. And instead of doing that, I could see my campsite a couple miles away. I went up and over a ridge and spent a cold, miserable bivouac overnight because it was safe. And I metaphored that story into the current situation, and I ended by saying I was growing tired of my hedonistic life and I wanted to be a part of something bigger. And they had me go out this different door where I found the missing red taggers. And pretty soon, we are all reunited in the first and one and only red tag reunion. And then we were escorted to lunch and we had our own table. And no, even though they couldn't talk to us, everybody was looking at us. We were like the Group W bench in Alice's restaurant. And afterwards, someone took my red tag away and escorted me back to my original company in time to get my final issue and my haircut like nothing ever happened. And that was my first 15 hours of boot camp. And I only had 8 more weeks to go. And I made it, and it worked, and I learned that I could work and play well with others if enough people are screaming at me. And during the final 8 weeks of that ordeal, I never saw another one of my fellow red taggers again.